You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Eddie Bates.
It is Maundy Thursday.
Holy Thursday? Maundy
not
Thursday?
Not Monday Thursday. Maundy Thursday.
It's not a week full of Mondays.
It is not. Well, I don't know about that. It is Thursday of Holy Week, and we're going to talk about one of my favorite things for the whole program today, which is very exciting. And hopefully we have sung some of these hymns during the week, and we will sing more this weekend. So, joining us in studio, Philip Magnus, director of Sanctuary Worship at Concordia Lutheran Church in Kirkwood, Missouri. Welcome.
Oh,
thanks for coming over.
Happy to be here.
Talking about some great hymns. We'll talk about the hymn of the day for today, Maundy Thursday, and tomorrow, Good Friday, and then we're actually going to get a sneak peek of Easter. How's it running?
You're
words
trying
together.
To say preview.
Preview, sneak preview, sneak peek. Yeah, of Easter. So we'll get a little
spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. If you don't want to hear about Easter yet. Pause when you're halfway there. We're jumping into to Maundy Thursday, which is the service tonight, and the hymn or the hymn of the day for this service is Lutheran Service Book 617, O Lord, We Praise Thee, which is probably a very familiar hymn. We sing it all the time during communion services, probably. What do you want us to know about this one?
Many churches do sing this one. This is one of the great chorales of the church, and it is one that you can pretty much pull out stops on in any parish that you play out, and the people will sing it and sing it well. The hymn goes back to the Luther and the early Reformation. It was in the Second Lutheran Hymnal Worship Resource. It was more for a choir and for home devotion, but it was included in the 1524 Enchiridia, which was released right after the first Lutheran hymnal, the Acht Lieder book, the eight song book. But here's the cool thing about this hymn. It is a medieval Lyza, and that was a type of congregational song of the pre-Reformation era. Yes, Virginia, the congregation did sing hymns before Luther. There's this romanticized history out there as if there were like a tape on all the Christians' mouths, and then Luther comes and opens up the floodgate of song, and that is really not the case. And probably on another show you could have Dr. Joseph Hurl on, and he will tell you all about the long struggle to really develop singing in the evangelical church. There were places that sang, places that didn't sing. And in many parts of Germany, there were various laity hymns of the laity, and this was one of them, at least the first stanza mm-hmm. was. This stanza was typically sung at the Feast of Corpus Christi, which is a festival that we Lutherans reject because that's when the medieval church and Roman Catholics to this day, and many countries have a big feast of Corpus Christi to this mm-hmm. day, like Island of Grenada, their big Roman Catholic procession, and they process the sacrament around. And of course, Lutherans rejected this practice, but it's a wonderful example of how Luther and Lutheranism practices a conservative approach to Reformation. We keep babies and get rid of dirty bathwater. G.K. Chesterton famously said the difference between a reformer and a radical is that the radical says, I don't understand this, let's get rid of it. And the reformer says, oh, I don't understand this thing, let me study it and decide what's worth keeping and what's worth getting rid of. Mm-hmm. Well, so Luther takes this hymn, he sanitizes it a little bit. There was a line at the end I won't go into, has some history to it, that he thought, didn't have the best association. And then he wrote two new stanzas. He referred to this hymn before it was published as a hymn for the evangelical churches in the foreword to his Formula Missae, his first mass before the German mass, the Latin mass that he did, which was used in the city and academic churches during the Reformation era for a century or so, recommending this as a good hymn to be sung. And accordingly, in many of the liturgies, if you go around to the various church orders of the various states or kingdoms, principalities of Germany, and the various churches, This was often prescribed as something to be sung during the communion or to be sung at the end of communion. So it has a wonderful history to that, but I think it's very interesting that, you know, he takes something that was associated with a feast day, and he's like, well, we're not doing that anymore, but this hymn is excellent, and let's do something with it. And it was also smart because he was able to draw on something that the people knew, so when he wrote additional stanzas to it, they were able to readily sing it.
Right, it wasn't something totally new for them. They knew the melody, they could sing it. What else do you want us to know about, O Lord, we praise thee?
Well, a little interesting theological point might be made. We, of course, do not derive our doctrine from practice, but our practice flows from our doctrine. Sometimes when people point to our practice, we can get rightly skittish or defensive, saying, well, hold on there, you know, let's go to the Bible, or let's go to the confessions. But it's interesting that Luther himself, with the proper understanding that good practice flows from correct doctrine, nonetheless pointed to this hymn. So he actually did have the practice himself sometimes of saying, well, look, we sing this hymn. And, of course, the understanding was the hymn had been vetted and it was part of the teaching. Well, he uses this in arguing against the Roman practice of the time of having communion in one kind, because this was a longstanding medieval Liza, which obviously had, you know, had the imprimatur of the Roman Church, and said, this hymn shows that we receive the sacrament in both kinds. So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit. So, you know, rightly understood, if we understand that it's that the practice flows from the doctrine, it sometimes is illustrative and helpful to point to a practice and say, well, this is why we're doing this, and this is why.
I want to move ahead to Good Friday.
Sure.
Before we run out of time. Sing my tongue the glorious battle. 454 in the
Twist and
Service
Shout.
Book.
This is one of my favorites.
It's so good.
It really is. Well, this is another example. Looks like we have a theme for this segment of the Reformation rather than the radical approach. Because here we see a hymn from the 6th century that was cleaned up. Originally, this is from a hymn that had 10 stanzas. We have 5 in our hymnal. The original 10 stanza hymn was written for the presentation of what were claimed to be relics from the Holy Cross to a queen, Queen Radegunda, I guess before French sounded very French, in Poitiers in 569. And so Frankish kingdom there, and this queen has this new cathedral, and she gets this big delivery from the east. Here are the relics, and Fortunatus writes this glorious hymn. And it's a great hymn, but some of the stanzas are a bit, you know, problematic with some of the claims they make. Part of this hymn was used during the Reformation era for the Royal Banner's Forward Go. These stanzas were taken by John Mason Neal. He took 5 stanzas and worked this into a suitable, glorious hymn for Good Friday. John Mason Neal was a major hymn writer and translator of what was known as the Oxford Movement in Anglicanism in the 19th century. It paralleled the Lutheran confessional revival, similar sentiments, reactions against pietism, and a desire to recover church fathers, the confessional documents. So it was a conservative movement, both in Anglicanism and in Lutheranism. And so something that our Lutheran reformers, our Lutheran fathers of the 19th century looked with favor upon the Oxford movement. So it's no surprise that when Lutherans began to worship in English, they took many of the hymns of the Oxford movement writers because they comport with biblical and evangelical theology. So anyway, yeah, so there you have another example of something. It's like, well, this hymn's got some issues, but we can clean it up and we have this wonderful pearl.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, the tune is written by Carl Schalk.
So he's
wonderful.
And he's alive, and you can have a beer with him, so we can call this contemporary worship.
he's such a great tune writer, composer, I guess that's the word for it.
He's a tune writer.
Tune writer.
He's a composer, and he's written many fine tunes. This is early Schalk.
Yeah.
Get this. The tune with this text first appears in a youth magazine in 1967. This is early Schalk. And this kind of makes me wonder if our friends at Higher Things are out there listening. Maybe y'all should start putting some hymn stanzas in your magazine or some hymns, and you never know, you might come across, help the church discover the next Sing My Tongue for the next hymnal.
Something that my husband always likes to point out in this tune is that if you kind of draw lines between the notes create a cross.
Oh, yes.
Ba, 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 ba. It creates a cross. And I don't know if that was on purpose. I don't remember that part
of the story.
Little
Carl does is not on purpose.
That so is true.
Andy and Sarah, you need to have Carl Schalk on your show now.
That would be so fun.
I don't think I should draw in my hymnal, though.
I can draw in mine. It's my hymnal. What else do you want us to know about Sing My Tongue before we go to break? We have about 2 minutes.
Well, I tongue in cheek, joking about contemporary worship, but this was a cutting edge hymn in its time. And if you look at Dr. Schalk's music and his hymnody, most of it's written with choirs and organs in mind, especially the middle and later Schalk works. But in the 60s, he was writing resources for along with his other music and his other things he was doing. But one of his projects, he was writing resources so that you could have good songs that were playable and accompanied, able to be accompanied and led by guitar. And this hymn fits that bill, and so that's sort of an interesting little thing. So it's a great tune, and it sounds majestic on organ with brass, but you can also play this with a guitar or piano-led ensemble.
I wonder if our friends in Latin America and Caribbean region sing this on guitar. I'd love to hear
when
that.
I've sung this That'd tune so with cool. my French brothers, my Francophone brothers and sisters in Africa, they love it.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Of course, there's no guitar; it's just drums and voices.
That's true.
But it has that cross-cultural appeal to it.
Yeah.
We are talking with Philip Magnus, director of Sanctuary Worship at Concordia Lutheran Church in Kirkwood, taking a look at the hymns of Holy Week. Now we are moving into
Easter
Resurrection.
Spoiler
alert. Stick around. You're listening to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.